It's Friday, March 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, the White House sticks by President Trump's belief that he was bugged.
The bottom line is that the president said last night that he will be providing, that there would be additional information coming forward. There's a ton of media reports out there that indicate that something was going on during the 26th election.
Also, President Trump sends his first budget to Congress, but will it pass? A key House committee passes the president's health care legislation. German Chancellor Angela Merkel visits the White House. What's a personal air conditioning robot? And Disney bets $300 million on a new Beauty and the Beast. That's all on today's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Thanks for being with us. Top U.S. lawmakers said Thursday there is no evidence to substantiate President Donald Trump's allegation that his predecessor Barack Obama wiretapped his phones at New York's Trump Tower in the weeks before November's election. The two top senators on the Senate Intelligence Committee, Republican Richard Burr and Democrat Mark Warner, said in a statement, "Based on the information available to us, we see no indications that Trump Tower was the subject of surveillance by any element of the United States government, either before or after Election Day 2016. Their statement followed one from House of Representatives Speaker Paul Ryan, who also dismissed the president's explosive claim March 4th that Obama had ordered the eavesdropping.
The intelligence committees, in their continuing, widening, ongoing investigation of all things Russia, got to the bottom, at least so far, with respect to our intelligence community, that no such wiretap existed.
But at the White House, spokesman Sean Spicer insisted that there is more information to come and that the president did not specifically mean wiretapping, but rather surveillance.
I'm not going to get into how the president makes a decision. I think that what I think is clear, though, is through the reporting that I just read, is that there's clearly widespread open source material pointing to surveillance that was conducted during the 2016 election.
So if there is other information, why won't the president release it?
Again, I'm not going to get into that yet. I think the president discussed that last night on his interview, and we'll let the process play out. I understand what he discussed. I think they have clearances in the House and the Senate Intelligence Committees. They're able to conduct this.
In a televised interview Wednesday night, President Trump said he stands by his claim that Obama wiretapped the Trump Tower, the skyscraper where the billionaire real estate mogul ran his campaign, and his home before winning the White House.
Wiretap covers a lot of different things. I think you're going to find some very interesting items coming to the forefront over the next 2 weeks.
Trump made the wiretapping charge against his predecessor two Saturdays ago in a string of Twitter comments. One of them said, "Terrible. Just found out that Obama had my wires tapped in Trump Tower just before the victory." For his part, President Obama dismissed the allegation as simply false, and Trump, since then, has not substantiated his claim. Until Wednesday's Fox interview, President Trump had dodged reporters' questions about the allegation. Newly released documents show that former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn was paid nearly $68,000 by Russian interests in 2015. Now, that money largely came from a $45,000 fee that he was paid by the Kremlin-funded RT television network. Flynn traveled to Moscow to help promote RT's 10th anniversary, a trip that included a gala dinner at which the American general was seated at the same table as Russian President Vladimir Putin. In addition, Flynn received two $11,250 payments, one from the U.S. subsidiary of a Russian cybersecurity firm, and another from Volga Dnieper Airlines, a Russian carrier that runs charter flights. The extent of the payments to Flynn added a new chapter into a string of contacts that Trump aides had with Moscow in the weeks and months before the president's victory in 2016's election, as well as during the transition period before he took office in January. Ever since then, federal investigators and lawmakers have been poring over details of documents compiled by the U.S. intelligence community, which concluded that Russia indeed meddled in the election to help Trump beat former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Flynn was also paid more than $500,000 last year to lobby for Turkey while he was advising Trump during the billionaire real estate mogul's campaign. After Trump fired him, Flynn, retroactively registered his activities as an agent representing Turkey earlier this month. Turning now to some of the other top stories in the world, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson visited the world's most heavily armed border, greeting U.S. soldiers on guard near the tense buffer zone between North and South Korea. Reports say as many as 42 people were killed in airstrikes in Syria near the rebel-held province of Idlib. Somali pirates who seized a Comoros-flagged oil tanker earlier this week after 5 years without a major hijacking in the region have released the ship and its crew without conditions. French prosecutors are investigating a possible Greek link after a letter exploded Thursday at the Paris office of the International Monetary Fund. And Brazil's health ministry says 424 people have been infected and 137 have died from a yellow fever outbreak. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on our website, voanews.com, and on our mobile app. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. President Trump delivered his first budget to the Capitol on Thursday with cuts in foreign aid, a multi-billion dollar increase in defense spending, and cuts in non-defense programs, including congressional favorites such as medical research and help for homeless veterans. The White House's America First budget proposal for the federal government proposes to significantly boost defense spending and offset the increase with steep cuts in funding for the State Department, foreign aid programs, the agency responsible for enforcing environmental regulations, and other domestic programs. As Cindy Sain tells us from the State Department, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is willing to take the cuts and said the level of spending it has been undertaking in recent years is simply not sustainable.
Foreign Service officers and other staff members at the State Department and at U.S. embassies around the world have been bracing for massive budget cuts, as well as steep reductions in foreign aid, as global development expert George Ingram told VOA.
What I've heard is the cuts are likely to be in the nature of 30%, that the original OMB proposed cut was 37%, and that the secretary pushed back and said, don't do 37% in the first year, phase it in over 3 years, and that what we're likely to see is a budget cut in the range of 30%.
Human rights and humanitarian aid groups say the impact on refugees and other vulnerable people around the world would be devastating, as Odote Akwai told VOA via Skype.
You know, civil society organizations, governments, I think are all extremely concerned about not only the withdrawal of resources or the cutting of resources, but I think they're also concerned about the vacuum left by the absence of the United States as a partner, as a generator of innovation, of creativity, and also, of course, as a voice on human rights.
But some analysts say the State Department is a bloated bureaucracy that would benefit from cuts. Former diplomat James Roberts spoke to VOA.
So I think there's plenty of room to reorganize to make the State Department really a better, more efficient, more effective player as representative of the American people, a player overseas, because it's going to have a simplified lines of authority, and where money will be spent, it'll be spent better. And yes, there will be cuts that will also have to be made as a result of that.
George Ingram also worked as a senior staff member on Capitol Hill. He says Congress will not go along with such steep cut to U.S. foreign aid and diplomacy.
What we've seen in the last month is a bipartisan outcry from members of the House and the Senate that a drastic cut to the international affairs account is unacceptable. So I think you're going to see some real pushback by the Congress this year.
The global fight to defeat the so-called Islamic State would also suffer from drastic budget cuts to U.S. diplomacy, says one Republican senator.
I want the committee to understand that any budget we pass that guts the State Department's budget, you'll never win this war. As a matter of fact, ISIL will be celebrating.
President Trump's budget will likely be the focus of fierce debate on Capitol Hill in the months to come. Cindy Sane, VOA News, State Department.
As Cindy mentioned, the president's proposals got a little bit of a frosty greeting from Democrats on Capitol Hill Thursday. House Minority Leader Democrat Nancy Pelosi of California said that the budget makes cuts in education and health care, cuts that the country cannot afford.
President Trump has shown that he does not value the future of our children and working families. It fails to recognize that the health of America, the strength of America, does not just depend on our military might, which is very important and we all support, but also our strength springs from the health, the education, and the well-being of the American people.
Maryland Senator Chris Van Hollen, a Democrat on the Senate Budget Committee, said the Trump plan is, in his words, great if you can fly to Mar-a-Lago, but stinks for the rest of us. He said it favors the rich and cuts vital programs that help the poor and protect the environment.
It is directly aimed at hurting working families, and it will hurt people's opportunity to get ahead and make it in America. It gives polluters free rein to dirty our air and contaminate our water.
Thursday's proposal only looks at discretionary spending. It does not address taxes. It contains no revenue projections. It also excludes major programs such as Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare. It is designed as a blueprint for department agencies and agency heads. Elsewhere, the House Budget Committee voted Thursday to advance the American Health Care Act, President Trump's controversial plan to revamp the Affordable Care Act known as Obamacare. Three conservative lawmakers voted against the measure in the committee. One more Republican vote and it would not have passed, a potentially damaging setback to the legislation. But speaking to reporters Thursday, House Speaker Paul Ryan appeared confident the bill would pass, especially since he and President Trump are working together on the issue, despite reports that they were at odds over some of its provisions.
Clearly, the main parts of this bill are going to stay exactly as they are, but we're making those improvements and refinements based upon the feedback we're getting from our members. And the President of the United States is the one who's been mediating this. The President of the United States is the one who's bringing people together, sitting around a table, hashing out our differences so that we can get to a consensus document. The goal here is get to a bill that can pass, that we can pass, and that actually is great policy. And the president is playing a very constructive role on this, and literally hand in glove. Every day we talk, we compare notes. Our teams are fused and working together, and I'm very excited about that.
The Budget Committee voted to urge Republican leaders to allow amendments that would tighten Medicaid spending for poor people more than the bill currently does. House Minority Leader Democrat Nancy Pelosi of California said Speaker Ryan is asking his membership to walk the plank for a bad bill.
This bill, which was called by Speaker Ryan an act of mercy, called that bill an act of mercy. Is it an act of mercy to throw 24 million people out of health insurance so Republicans can hand billionaires a massive new tax giveaway? The bill steals $600 billion from working families and gives it to the rich. It's Robin Hood in reverse.
Republicans have been scrambling to salvage their bill after the Congressional Budget Office said that some 24 million people would be shoved off the insurance rolls in the next decade under the GOP bill. Meanwhile, some Republican governors, including John Kasich of Ohio, Rick Snyder of Michigan, and Asa Hutchinson of Arkansas, say the spending plan will not work for their states. In a letter sent to the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, the governor said the legislation provides no new flexibility for states, fails to ensure enough resources to protect vulnerable residents, and shifts significant costs onto the state's shoulders. U.S. President Donald Trump hosts Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel at the White House this week for their first meeting. The future of the transatlantic relationship hangs in the balance. VOA senior White House correspondent Peter Heinlein reports the two leaders have some fence mending to do before they can proceed.
On the campaign trail, Trump accused Chancellor Merkel of ruining Germany with her lenient refugee policy.
I used to be a fan of Merkel. I used to think she was terrific, a big leader, a great leader. I think what she did to Germany is a disgrace.
The chancellor was equally scathing in describing Trump's travel ban on six mostly Muslim countries. Now, forced into a partnership to deal with the world's most critical issues, Merkel was conciliatory.
I am deeply convinced that the transatlantic partnership based on common values is in all of our interest, not only for us Europeans. I'll hold my talks with President Donald Trump in this spirit.
When they sit down together at the White House, Trump and Merkel will have to overcome deep differences on some of the world's thorniest issues, such as the viability of NATO.
I'm a NATO fan, but many of the countries in NATO, many of the countries that we protect, many of these countries are very rich countries. They're not paying their bills.
Merkel is going to want Trump to clear up confusion about the U.S. position on NATO's role in countering Russian aggression in Ukraine, says transatlantic relations scholar Daniel Hamilton via Skype.
NATO has put more of its troops within the eastern part of the alliance because many allies are very nervous about Vladimir Putin, his intentions. He has annexed illegally part of Ukraine, and he has had Russian troops in other parts of Ukraine. The question is, what is the United States' approach to Russia and how does that affect NATO?
Compromise is said to be in the air on another thorny issue, trade. Trump, the negotiator, has said he prefers bilateral trade pacts, but Europeans insist that the EU represents all 28 countries in trade talks. Peter Heinlein, VOA News, the White House.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. Coming up, a personal air conditioning robot could be in your future. And Disney spends $300 million to make Beauty and the Beast come to life. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. You know, power management is one of the most important aspects of the transition from fossil fuels to sustainable sources of energy. Old, power-hungry devices such as the heated filament light bulbs are being replaced with much more efficient LED lights. As George Putich tells us, some University of Maryland researchers came to a recently held energy summit here in Washington to show how air conditioning technology could also be made more efficient.
Heating or cooling of spaces unoccupied by people wastes a lot of energy.
Traditionally, we air condition entire buildings. But when you look at the building here, only the people need to be comfortable. The 20 feet above or whatever, we don't really care about.
But installing a new or replacing an old heating and cooling system in large buildings can be very costly. At the recently held Energy Summit in Washington, D.C., University of Maryland researchers presented what they say is a cheaper solution: personal heating and cooling robots running on batteries. It does not mean that centralized heating or cooling should be switched off, but adjusting the thermostat setting for just a few degrees may save a lot of money.
We have a cooling system that does not reject waste heat, doesn't have any wires, it's not connected anywhere, and can still operate for any number of hours.
The smart air conditioning robot could be programmed to follow a person and direct a jet of cool or warm air to where it feels most comfortable. It uses only 50 watts, while the power consumption of a centralized system may use up to a kilowatt per person.
Another idea is to have a wristband, wearable technology that communicates with the device and tells the device how comfortable or uncomfortable that person is.
Instead of releasing the heat that is a byproduct of every air conditioning device, this robot keeps it in special thermal energy storage, which can be cooled during battery recharging phase. For now, a fully charged battery can run the unit for up to 4 hours. Researchers say in high volume production, the price of the individual device may be as low as $150. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
A new live-action version of Walt Disney's animated smash hit Beauty and the Beast opens across the United States today. As VOA's Penelope Pulu tells us, the big-budget film is the latest in a trend of Disney features to go from the animating drawing board to live action, a trend that is expected to continue.
Bonjour!
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 There goes the baker with his tray like always.
Emma Watson inhabits the role as Belle, the iconic character from the 1991 animated film Beauty and the Beast.
I want adventure in the great wide.
As a child, you love Disney, but as an adult, you still love Disney because it sort of connects you with that childlike feeling that everything is going to be okay and there's hope in the world.
How lovely to make your acquaintance.
It was this nostalgia that prompted Disney to invest $300 million in this lavish live-action musical of Beauty and the Beast, with Oscar-winning filmmaker Bill Condon at the helm. The film offers background stories to the live-action heroes, adding depth to characters such as Belle.
It really was the first modern Disney heroine, Disney princess, you know, who doesn't want to be a princess, who doesn't really care about finding the prince. You know, someone who's more interested in books and seeing the world and kind of figuring out who she is than in finding a guy and getting married.
Emma Watson says the evolution of the romance between Beauty and the Beast is also more complex than it was in its previous incarnations.
Beast and Belle really dislike each other at the beginning, and they really don't get on, and then they form this friendship, and then they fall in love.
The raw talent of A-list actors playing digitally rendered characters, the elaborate sets and costumes, and the original score enhanced with new music bolstered Disney's decision to take such a financial gamble. It also helped that the studio had tested the market prior to production with a 90-second teaser trailer that generated a record of 92 million views. And then there were previous Disney animated fairy tales turned live-action box office hits, such as The Jungle Book by acclaimed filmmaker Jon Favreau. The film about Mowgli, a man-cub raised by animals in the jungle, is populated by computer-generated characters, except for young Neil Setti, who plays Mowgli. The Jungle Book went on to receive an Academy Award following Disney's template of darker, more complex storytelling that draws kids and adults alike into the theaters.
Well, well.
Similarly, Maleficent, the dark fairy who curses Princess Aurora in Sleeping Beauty, got her own live-action movie in 2014 with Angelina Jolie as the title character.
No Gaston.
In the new Beauty and the Beast, Disney goes a step further, embracing the darker, more adult formula even at the cost of controversy. In the story, there is a moment of gay romantic affection by Le Fou, played by Josh Gad, the sidekick of handsome and conceited Gaston, interpreted by Luke Evans. The interplay led Malaysia to shelve the film. But Disney seems undaunted by these reactions. It plans to turn at least a dozen of its iconic films into live-action musicals. Beauty and the Beast will be the most significant testing ground as it opens worldwide. Penelope Hulu, VOA News, Washington.
Beauty and the Beast.
I can just see the crowds lining up outside the multiplex right now. Some sad news now. James Cotton, a Grammy Award-winning blues harmonica master whose full-throated sound backed such legends as Muddy Waters, Sonny Boy Williamson II, and Howlin' Wolf, has died at 81. A statement from Alligator Records, Cotton's label, said he died Thursday of pneumonia at St. David's Medical Center in Austin. The Mississippi Delta native performed professionally since he was only 9 years old. He backed Muddy Waters in his landmark album, At Newport, on Chess Records. After going solo in the 1960s, Cotton released almost 30 albums, including his 1996 Grammy Award-winning Verve album, Deep in the Blues. And how would you like a diamond that weighed in at more than 700 carats? Well, a pastor in Sierra Leone happened to find a stone that was exactly that. One of the world's largest uncut diamonds was handed to the president of the African nation on Wednesday and filmed by the State House. The diamond was found by a Christian pastor in Sierra Leone's eastern Kono region and is now being stored in the country's central bank. Government resources says they plan to auction it. You've been listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd. You can find us at voanews.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Burns. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Over the past two decades, much of East Africa has suffered through recurrent droughts resulting in failed crops, dying cattle, and escalating food prices. The result is hunger, undernutrition, and suffering for millions of people. This year, the rains have been scant, more so than usual. This is exacerbating drought in the Horn of Africa, particularly in Somalia, Ethiopia, and Kenya, where around 15 million people are suffering from food insecurity as a result. The Famine Early Warning Systems Network, or FUSENET, which is funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development as well as the Food Security and Nutrition Analysis Unit for Somalia, are sounding the alarm in Somalia. They estimate that half of Somalia's population of 12.3 million people is facing hunger or starvation. The southern agricultural and pastoral areas and northeastern pastoral areas have been hardest hit. Over the past few years, food insecurity has been dropping in Ethiopia. The number of people requiring humanitarian assistance there has declined by half since late 2015. But as last year's October to December rains failed and drought conditions developed in the country's southern and southeastern regions, farmers and herders who had been unable to recover from the previous drought are once again in need of assistance. According to the government of Ethiopia and its relief partners, some 5.6 million people will need relief food assistance between January and December 2017. Kenya is also suffering from inadequate rainfall during both the March to May 2016 long rain season and the October to December short rain season. In some parts of northern Kenya, 70% of water sources are already dry and people are already suffering hunger. FUSENET projected in January that without sustained relief assistance, crisis-level acute food insecurity could occur in some drought-affected areas of Kenya in the coming months. So far this year, the United States government has committed more than $282 million for critical relief interventions in the Horn of Africa. We call on our global partners to join us in this effort.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.